Freedom Summer and the voting drives that happened, and it's the 50th anniversary. And there was a lot of work that happened right here in Louisiana that doesn't get as much play, shall we say, as what happened in Mississippi. All right, so the introduction by Ronnie Moore, who is the director of the Congress of Racial Equality, the Louisiana Project. Much has been written about the Mississippi Summer Project. An equally significant project was conducted by CORE this summer in Louisiana, where civil rights workers face similar terrorism and intimidation. While Congress and the Supreme Court may let the niggers get out of their place, Louisiana racists believe that beatings, jailings, and even murders will keep Negroes from moving where they ain't got no business being. They believe violence will keep the niggers from voting, using public facilities and accommodations, and seeking equal job opportunities. As CORE Field Secretary in Louisiana, I have fought these racists nonviolently for the past 3 years. During this period, I have been arrested 15 times and served a total of 6 months in jail, of which 57 days were solitary confinement. I am free today to fight in this nonviolent revolution against the bullets and bombs of segregationists because CORE has posted over $30,000 in bond for my release. Seldom does a day pass in Louisiana without civil rights workers being intimidated and local citizens, particularly voter applicants, being subjected to economic, political, and physical reprisals. During the search for the bodies of the three murdered Mississippi civil rights workers, the mutilated bodies of two Negroes were found, floating in a Louisiana river in the parishes of Tensas and Madison. No one knows whether they were killed in Louisiana or Mississippi, but I believe they were murdered in Mississippi, in Louisiana, excuse me. I know for sure that it was in Tallulah, the parish seat of Madison, where this summer, CORE worker Mike Lesser was threatened, beaten, stripped of his clothing, jailed overnight, tried in a segregated courtroom in the early morning without a lawyer, and sentenced to 25 days in jail with a fine of $25. The judge suspended his sentence and ordered him out of town, escorted by the police with a warning never to return, or he'd be killed. There have been no known murders to date in the civil rights struggle in Louisiana. But judging from the prevailing patterns of violence, I say killings are inevitable unless federal protection is made available. I can cite numerous incidents of reprisals against Louisiana Negroes desiring the benefits of their American heritage. Reverend Joseph Carter was arrested for disturbing the peace when he first attempted to register to vote in St. Francisville on October 17, 1963. He became the first Negro registered voter in West Feliciana Parish since Reconstruction. In the same parish this summer, a CORE worker was beaten and others, including myself, were shot at by ex-Sheriff Teddy H. Martin Sr. while we escorted voter applicants to the registrar's office. Recently, after parish authorities arrested the former sheriff on a warrant signed by me, he was appointed by Governor John McKeithen as assistant warden at Angola State Penitentiary. Teachers, librarians, school bus drivers, and others in public employment have been fired from their jobs because they taught persons how to fill out voter registration forms. Farmers have been denied access to the only markets for their crops. Civil rights workers have been jailed for canvassing possible voter registrants on Mr. Charlie's plantation. The suffering, pain, and humiliation of being forced from home at night like Johnny Hamilton of West Feliciana Parish, or of seeing the remains of a burned community center like the Faith, Hope, and Charity Hall in Hammond, are part of the struggle of underprivileged Americans in a state like Louisiana, where neither parish officials nor the federal government offer any real protection. Into this situation, from all sections of the country, came the CORE summer volunteers. They were deeply impressed. In reading this pamphlet, you will share their impressions as they described them and in two instances actually wrote them for their hometown newspaper. The final story is a newspaper interview with a volunteer attorney.
Report from Plaquemine by James Von Mottry, a Corps volunteer, from the St. Petersburg, Florida Times, July 13, 1964. Plaquemine, Louisiana, is a small town south of Baton Rouge on the Mississippi River. It was chosen 2 years ago by Corps Field Secretary Ronnie Moore as headquarters for voter registration in Louisiana. It was in Plaquemine that the Louisiana group met to prepare for the summer's activity. For a week, we 60 workers got up early and met, with only food breaks, until 9 p.m. Our leaders warned us of new dangers. We were beaten in mock hatred. We spoke to mock potential registrants. We spoke to non-existent church crowds, and we spent time in mock jails. With this thin veneer to protect us, we were sent out into the parishes. The training session couldn't have warned us about the Louisiana sun and terrain. A sugar plantation is hot and dusty. Dust or mud, depending on the weather, make up the roads, which are lined with sewage ditches. But the training sessions did prepare us to work, to register voters. "Good afternoon, ma'am," the interracial team says. "We're from the Congress of Racial Equality, and we'd like to know whether you'd be interested in registering to vote." If the answer is yes, there begins the long process of teaching application. In Louisiana, a Negro applicant may be failed for not dotting an I, or for circling something which should have been underlined, or for many other minor errors not related to his ability to vote. The worker becomes accustomed, if he is white, to having little children timidly reach up to him and touch his skin, and then draw away shyly. Flies buzz freely through a screenless door. As the worker teaches, drops of sweat fall on the form, smearing the ink. The city is a little better in that the houses are close together and local clinics may be set up at night. Registration clinics are held from morning until the last person leaves at night. "How old are you, ma'am?" one old woman who'd never thought of it before spent 10 minutes recollecting. "Your exact age, ma'am, is 64 years, 6 months, and 17 days. The application wants it just like that. Marked on clinical tables, scrawled on old envelopes and paper scraps, are words of the preamble, "In order to form a more perfect union." Spellings have to be known by Negroes in Louisiana. Speaking in churches is also a part of the task force worker's job. In our week's training session in Plaquemine, we were told that in certain parishes, if you wore a suit, you would offend the people because you would appear to be showing off. In other parishes, if you didn't wear a suit, you'd be embarrassed. The worker must be prepared to spend hours socializing with people hungry for talk after spending an isolated week. Sometimes it's rougher. About 2 weeks ago, I was in Clinton, Louisiana, 20 miles from the Mississippi state line. I was there to assist registrants to the registrar's office and to question them on their treatment by the registrar. Things were going all right, with only minor incidents until the afternoon when three local toughs jumped me while I was talking to a successful applicant. "Get up," they screamed after they had knocked me to the ground. All I can remember now is that the pavement was warm, and that maybe if I covered my head, I wouldn't be badly hurt. They pulled me to my feet. By now, there was a crowd around yelling at me. I thought, I have never even talked to them before. What is making them hate me? I tried to go away, and somebody ripped off the back of my shirt. As I went down the second time, I thought, there it is, baby. But then somebody yelled, "Stop it. Let him go back to where he came from." I can remember the dust grinding and the abrasions on my back and the voice addressing me, "You got off lucky this time, son. Don't let me see your face around here again." I walked back to what they called Negroville alone. One day, 6 people were shot at as they left the registrar's office in St. Francisville, West Feliciana parish seat. Feliciana means happy land. 4 of our workers had accompanied 2 Negro women to the registrar's office. A man waving a gun approached them and shot at their retreating car. The police made no arrests, although our workers identified the gun toter. Nearly everyone here admits of being scared. No one wants to become a martyr. But still people come down, no pay, sweating the long hot rides, the long walks, and the long hours. The northern office in Monroe, Louisiana is a little larger and a little cooler than the main office in Plaquemine. But the air still hangs tensely about it. A week before I arrived, a group of workers were driven out by a bomb scare. Crank phone calls come over the wires, keeping the lines tied up continually. West Monroe, tense twin city to Monroe, has been the scene of numerous harassments of our workers by the police. Two were arrested for vagrancy, three were arrested for an obscure solicitation ordinance. The word came from the police department not to canvass interracially, but CORE doesn't want to compromise its principles, and finally, we won the argument. Stories come back after work finishes in the evening. One person tells of an old gentleman who at first played the part of a slave, saying yassa and scratching his head. Then, upon hearing the canvasser's reason for knocking at its door, he lost his grin and his face wrinkled, and he said, "See that ditch out there? It smells of manure. I wake up every morning smelling that, and I never get used to it. My little girl had hepatitis from it. For 25 years, I voted to get rid of it. But what's the white man going to give me?" Another story of a Negro woman in Clinton, Mama Jo, who takes care of all the CORE workers there. Outside her door is a sign reading, "It is time for you to take a stand and become a first-class citizen. A voteless people is a hopeless people. Register and vote." Back in the main office, a sort of 10-by-10 box in a frame hotel in Plaquemine, sits a volunteer worker, amidst two mimeograph machines, four typewriters, a file cabinet, a supply cabinet, a folded cot, a desk, and a payphone. A small fan is on the desk. Its only job seems to be to blow the humidity around. His job is toughest, for along with it comes the boredom. The office hours, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. His pay, food to eat, and a roof overhead. But there is some time for fun. On the weekends, the local workers go into the local cafes, black, white, gray, and every other way, as a local Negro citizen observed. Over a glass of beer, the workers discuss home, politics, responsibilities, school, and the big one, the Negro's problems in America. In the black cafes ring out words which the walls will never hear again. The students learn new dances. Sometimes a group will hop around the floor in unison, hollering, "We want freedom." Around news time, everything comes to a hush and a crowd gathers around a portable TV, straining to hear the news of Mississippi and St. Augustine and Tuscaloosa and Cambridge. A lot of us have friends out there. Talk dwindles and we leave together, remembering the warning that we must never travel alone and always in a car at night. Almost invariably, every time a group gets together, waiting for dinner or resting afterward, we sing freedom songs. They range from old Negro spirituals to modified rock and roll. When a group breaks up, the final song sometimes drives the people into a thoughtful silence. May be the last time, may be the last time, may be the last time we sing together. May be the last time, but I don't know. That was a report from Plaquemine, Louisiana, by James Von Matry, a CORE volunteer, published in the St. Petersburg, Florida Times, July 13th, 1964.
Continuing on with Canvassing in Louisiana by Sharon Berger, another CORE volunteer from the Mishawaka Independent Enterprise, July 30th, 1964. "This afternoon we did some canvassing about 30 miles from Plaquemine. We talked to people who were afraid of us, people who didn't want us bothering them, and many more people who wanted us to help them get registered. The various community leaders are very concerned about their people. I speak of the Negro community, and anxious to work with us in every way they can. I'm the only Hoosier here, but Chicago and Detroit are represented. There are kids from California, New York, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Florida, and Ohio. You've driven through the South. You've gone down bad roads and seen shacks with a dozen ragged children sitting on the porch, too hot to play. Well, that's where I am, sitting on the sagging porches or inside on a broken-down bed with bugs crawling over the walls and floors and ceilings, walking through a dry field under a blazing sun to a woman picking butter beans, trying to get past the wall of fear a white face causes. And even if they know of us, that they have nothing to fear from CORE itself, even if they would like very much to register to vote, even if they know that when they can vote they may be able to change some things, they aren't sure that someone won't fire bullets into their homes in the night because they were seen talking to us in the day. Yesterday, a man sat talking to us with a knife in his hand. As we were leaving, he laughed and told us what had been in his mind while he'd seen us coming. White bill collectors down here hire Negroes to lead them to the houses they're looking for and to beat the debtors. Last week, I was in the home of a young couple. He was one of the fortunate few who had a job, and the three-room shack they lived in was owned by his employer, who took the rent from his wages. She was barefoot, wearing a dress that was faded and didn't fit. Dirt was blowing in through all the holes and cracks, but they had a new chair. There was a plant on the porch. The cheap bedspread was clean. They try. They have a little bit of next to nothing, and they may lose even that if they do something the white folks don't want them to do, such as register to vote. This morning we had about 20 Negroes waiting outside the registrar's office. They were standing quietly and calmly, waiting for their turns to go into the office where the registrar looks over their shoulders and blows smoke in their faces as they fill out the forms. They have to go in one at a time. The registrar walked out behind a lady he had just failed, without telling her why, of course, and saw a CORE member. He said, "Come here. Do you work for CORE?" Bob said yes, and the man shouted, "I refuse to be intimidated." He then threatened to close the office if Bob didn't leave, and as Bob was leaving, he said that he wouldn't let anyone that Bob had brought down come into the office. And people say, don't force things. We're asking the registrar to invite a Negro home for supper. Neither he nor the Negro wants that. We're asking that an American citizen, 21 years of age, who has lived 1 year in this parish, 6 months in this ward, and 30 days in this precinct, be allowed to fill out an application to become a registered voter. And who can say that no pressure should be brought to bear on a man, on a state, which says, okay if that citizen is white, and no if that citizen is black? Hooray, the boys just came back to the clinic. We're teaching the forms in a church. And said, 5 people passed. We danced around and grinned silly grins at one another. 5 people in 1 day. It must be some kind of record. Loria and I are canvassing Montpelier this afternoon and holding a clinic in a chapel there tonight. I have been soaked with sweat since I've been here. I don't remember how dry clothes feel. The work is hard, a lot of walking in a lot of sun. My patience is really developing, as everything takes a lot of time, especially teaching the minute details of the form. But I wouldn't be anywhere else doing anything else for anything. I really feel for the first time in a long time that there's some reason for me to be living and that what I'm doing really matters. About the dangers, 3 of our group were arrested while canvassing in another part of the state. I'm in St. Helena Parish this week and comparatively safe. The sheriff here is afraid of us because they don't want the Justice Department here at any cost. All right, that was Canvassing in Louisiana by Sharon Berger, who was a Congress of Racial Equality volunteer from the Mishawaka Independent Enterprise, July 30th, 1964. And we've been reading from Louisiana-Summer, 1964, the students report to their hometowns in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer and the voting registration drives.
Compilation of students' voices from the Louisiana or the Freedom Summer of 1964 throughout the South, and this is specifically for people who were working in Louisiana in that summer. This is by Jackie German, a staff writer of the St. Paul, Minnesota Pioneer Press, August 17, 1964. Rights worker lived in fear. And a Minneapolis girl who was shot at and jailed while teaching Louisiana Negroes how to fill out voting applications this summer said Sunday she lived in fear for her life 24 hours a day. Ronnie Siegel, 21, of 3731 Abbott Avenue South, spent 9 weeks in St. Helena, Louisiana, as a member of the Congress of Racial Equality's Summer Task Force. And during those weeks, she learned to live each day because I never knew if I'd be alive the next day. Miss Siegel, who was the only white core worker in St. Helena, said about the only contact she had with whites during her stay was when they were calling me names or throwing things at me. One time, it was when she was the target of a shotgun aimed by a white cracker. Three of us took two elderly ladies to West Feliciana to register to vote. The office hadn't been open since January 1963, and it was only going to be open for 2 days. We were getting out of the car when the former sheriff ran up and started throwing things at us. Then he hit one white boy with a stake. When we started driving away, he fired after us. But Miss Siegel said the closest she ever came to being killed was when the car she was in was surrounded by 9 armed men on a country road. 4 Negro workers and I were returning home after investigating a murder. We approached a sharp curve, hit a wet spot, and landed a post by the side of an old abandoned building. The fender was bent over the wheel, so we got out and tried to fix it. Suddenly, these men who apparently had been fox hunting were swarming around the car. When they saw me, they asked if I was white. I told them my daddy was, and they didn't bother to ask about my mother. I was afraid that if they knew both my parents were white, they would kill the Negro boys. We all thought they would kill us. Luckily, they called a deputy, and he recognized us. After the deputy arrived, they beat up one boy very badly. Finally, he told them to stop. They charged me with reckless driving, exceeding the speed limit, and destroying private property. They didn't want to jail me, so they set my bond at $400 and told me to get a bondsman. I told them I couldn't get anyone until morning, so they took me to another parish and put me in jail overnight. While Miss Siegel was in Louisiana, her primary job was to teach Negroes how to fill out voter applications that are designed to be failed. In our parish, people had to fill out the form and produce an affidavit that they were 21. A great-grandmother might be coming to register, but if she didn't have a birth certificate stating she was 21, she was refused. If people aren't taught how to fill out the applications, they can't possibly pass. Questions on color and common law marriage were asked, and they asked for your employer. Even if you have a good job, you can't register because they are afraid they'd be fired. But although it was a slow and tedious job, Miss Siegel said inroads are being made. CORE is helping to bring hope and unification to the Negro community. The Negroes in Louisiana are living, sleeping, and eating hope. And they're experiencing a pride and respect they never had before. There is fear, but it's experienced by both the Negro and the white. Some whites believe in integration, but they're afraid to admit it. They don't want to be called a Negro lover. But at least in Louisiana, there isn't the state pride in killing a Negro that there is in Mississippi. Why does a girl who loves to go horseback riding, lives in a fashionable part of Minneapolis, and has only 6 credits left to earn before receiving a psychology degree at the University of Minnesota, leave it to go south and live with a Negro widow on a farm where she sleeps and eats with cockroaches, works without pay, subsists on 2 meals a day of chicken and rice, milks a cow each morning, and is hungry much of the time? I wanted to do something more than sit up north trying to raise money. I've been working with CORE since the Freedom Rides 3 years ago. On September 14th, I have to go back for my trial. Then in January, I'm going to go back on a full-time basis. I'll be the first white woman core worker in northern Louisiana, so I'll probably spend most of the winter in jail. And that was Rights Worker Lived in Fear by Jackie German, a staff writer, speaking about Ronnie Siegel, who worked in St. Helena, Louisiana, with the core summer task force. That was August 17th, 1964.
This public service announcement is brought to you by New Orleans Legal Assistance and WTUL New Orleans. New Orleans Legal Assistance offers legal aid to low-income area residents. There are different contact numbers for different local areas. Numbers for your area are available by calling me at 504-865-5885 or visiting the Legal Assistance Group's website, nolac.org. All right, and WTUL News and Views, your public affairs programming from the Community Gumbo Crew, brings you 2 hours of news and interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 to 10 a.m., including Democracy Now! At 9 o'clock and updates from The Lens. The Community Gumbo Crew is glad to bring you programs that pay more attention to and offer fresh perspectives on New Orleans and international issues. We can be reached at WTULnews@gmail.com or 504-457-VIEW. That's 457-8439. And past interviews can be found at WTULNewOrleans.com. You can like us on the Facebook and follow us on Tumblr as well. Okay, now we're going to continue reading from the Louisiana Summer, which is different articles from the Freedom Summer here in Louisiana, Freedom Summer of 1964. Commemorating the 50th anniversary, 50 years since these brave young folks did all of this very dangerous work just to secure their civilian rights. Clinton Girl Works with CORE by Judy Birkin, staff writer. This isn't the one you just read. Okay. From the Clinton Herald, August 20th, 1964. We shall overcome. With the words of the civil rights song still echoing in her ears, Peggy Ewan of 1524 Lazy Lane came home last week from Louisiana, where she worked 2 months with the Congress of Racial Equality, or CORE. We were subjected to a silent intimidation, Peggy said. Hate stares being followed by a semi-arrest on a charge of vagrancy. On the day I arrived in Plaquemine, the police stopped me and took me to the police station on a charge of vagrancy. It wasn't really an arrest. The police chief talked to me about being there and working for CORE. He didn't threaten her or attempt to discourage her attempts, Peggy said. With her main work concentrated in registering Negroes to vote, Peggy trained in Plaquemine for 1 week. Besides being taught the fundamentals of peaceful demonstrating and the art of self-protection without retaliation, she was taught how to canvass the Negro community and setting up clinics to instruct the citizens in how to fill out the necessary voting forms. When Peggy put her training to work, she found opposition from some of the Negroes as well as many Louisiana whites. Fear is a big thing in the Southern Negro's life, she said. For that reason, some of them refused to even listen to the pleas of the CORE workers to exercise their right to vote. Apathy is another Negro problem, according to Peggy. Many of the older Negroes have lived without the vote for years and are perfectly happy with their situation. They do not want to change. The CORE people would explain their purpose and invite the Negroes to a clinic on voter registration, which CORE would then set up in a town building, usually a church. In one rural parish, 41 persons attended a clinic, while in the city, the number slipped to 3 or 4 several times. At the clinic, the CORE workers distributed registration forms, which Louisiana law requires to be filled out by prospective voters. Included in the forms is a space in which the writer must state his color. Peggy said she and other CORE people told the Negroes to leave blank the spaces which CORE did not consider constitutional. Another question, seeking the party affiliation of the voter, required the word Democratic, to be written in. Peggy stated, or else the registrar would consider the application void. A part of the voter registration requirement is the taking of a test. 6 questions are asked, and the applicant must answer 4 of the 6 correctly. Peggy failed in her first try. There are 10 different forms of questions, and the applicant does not know ahead of the actual testing period which form he will draw. CORE located each of the 10 forms and in the voting clinics went through each question and answer with the Negroes. In the Herald newsroom, various reporters took the test and the results showed few prospective Louisiana voters among the group. Following up on the clinics, the CORE workers next moved into the Plaquemine Courthouse, where they directed Negroes to the registrar's office. "It was our desire to keep the registrar busy, as well as registering the Negroes," Peggy said. "He gets paid for doing nothing." A steady stream of Negro applicants filed into the office, and Peggy said an average of 1 out of 3 was successfully registered. It was almost as though a quota for successful applicants had been set up to appease us. A word in a history book to most Northerners, gerrymandering to the Plaquemine Negro means that their section, which lies in the geographical heart of the town, is considered outside of the city limits. Not being a part of the town, the section is without streetlights, has open sewers, and its own sheriff, who in reality has no police power. "When it rains," Peggy says, "the sewers back up and flood over into the streets, giving off a terrible stench. Small children are often found playing in the overflow." The CORE volunteers worked and lived only with the Negro population, receiving a sustenance wage and room and board. "Many local Negroes are active in the civil rights work," Peggy said, "and some are real spitfires." Peggy stayed with the Sergeant Caulfield family. Of the 6 Caulfield children, only 1 daughter, Thelma, 14, is still at home. "Although CORE is a nonviolent movement, some of the Negroes are armed," Peggy said. "The Caulfields have a shotgun, and Thelma knows how to use it." On one occasion, when a group of white youths parked menacingly near the Caulfield home, Thelma armed herself with the gun. Fortunately, Peggy recalls, she didn't have to use it. During the time Peggy lived with the Caulfields, 1 shot was fired at the house by passing whites. The shot went wild and did no damage, but Peggy soon received instructions on how to shoot the gun. In a question and answer period which followed, Peggy was asked what police protection was given to the Negro. Her reply, "None." But all is not as bleak as it looks. Peggy told of at least 1 instance among the CORE workers where a white man under the anonymity of darkness met with a CORE volunteer and talked for over an hour on Negro rights. Peggy noted, too, that some young Southern whites have joined the CORE movement. Will Peggy return to work again with CORE in the South? "I hope to. I've even given some thought to teaching there. There is a need for qualified teachers. A lack of education is the Negro's biggest problem." That was Clinton Girl Works with CORE by Judy Birkin, who was a staff writer, and it's from the Clinton Herald, August 20th, 1964. Michaela